Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with Vin Forte.
Hey.
How are you today, Vin?
I think we all have election fatigue right now. We're recording this 3 days after the election.
Yes.
Which means that we still don't have answers. If you're listening to this like a month from now, we might still not have answers.
Yes, it's Friday, November 6th. And I've still got MSNBC on in the background. And the number one thing going on
as of right now, they're trying to stop the votes.
We'll talk a little bit more about the election in our second segment. It's sort of something we have to talk about a little bit because it's all everyone's thinking about. But there is some other pop culture news, at least one piece of news that came out yesterday or a few days ago, that if it weren't for the election, conservatives would be really upset about it. And that would be the casting of Lashana Lynch as the new 007.
See, I thought this was something that we all knew already. Wasn't this revealed like a year ago?
I didn't know about it a year ago. I mean, it just seems like in the last couple of days you've been reading about it. Well, we know that she's in the new film, but then...
Right, I thought it had been like heavily rumored like a year or two ago that like, oh, she's going to... they're going to pass the baton to her and she's going to be the new Bond.
I mean, you would know better than me. I'm not a Bond fan. I've seen really a handful of James Bond films. It's the whole thing about spies, the whole archetype of the spy never really interested me. But I know this is a series that's very big. I mean, maybe just it kind of went over the radar before, and now it's coming out. I didn't hear about it until a couple days ago.
Yeah, I know people are definitely upset about it for some reason. I don't know, it just seems like another case where it's like, if she does a good job, like, there's no reason to really, like, get upset about it. Like, it's not like the movies are now based on Ian Fleming's. But first off, I don't know a single person who's read, like, any of the original Ian Fleming novels.
Right.
So, like, to say, oh, this, like, ruins the reputation or is, like, sullying Ian Fleming's original intent, I don't know. Like, the franchise is its own thing.
Right.
So, like, why can't you have a female James Bond or Jane Bond or whatever they're going to call this person? Maybe they'll just codename them Bond.
Well, she's a woman and she's African-American. So for people who are don't like those two categories, she's a real fly in their ointment. This is an interesting change for this franchise, because this franchise always would just recast the character of James Bond with a new actor. But this is a different approach. This is saying that James Bond, the character, is going to go away, but the designation 007 will remain with a new character, because she's in the new film as the character that she's going to be. She's going to be spun off. Maybe they're trying to do a Bond cinematic universe.
Maybe. Again, it's going to depend on if they call her Bond at the end of the day or at the end of the movie, because has always been, when they pass off to a new James Bond, that James Bond, air quotes, is like that person's like secret agent code name.
Now, I thought that that was just a fan theory propagated by Max Landis. Do you really think that it's sort of like a continuity? It's all been one continuity. Like, it's not this, because don't they have the same, like, parentage and stuff?
Yeah, well, and then, like, you have villains that have come back in the recent Bond movies that clearly would not have come back and are played by different actors. I think, honestly, with the James Bond franchise, I try not to look too deep into it. I think they're just supposed to kind of be, like, standalone movies. Like, I guess, like, some of the more recent ones have connected together.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, if you, the best way to sort of think about it is each actor playing James Bond, like, their era should be separated. Like, each James Bond performer should have its own sort of, like, timeline.
Right.
Even though there are certain cases, like, where, Dame Judi Dench was in the Pierce Brosnan movies.
Right.
But then also was in the new Daniel Craig one.
Right.
That, I think, to me, is just a case of, like, hey, we like Judi Dench. she plays this character very well and we can still get her. So why not continue to have her on? Which is, like, fine. Like, if you're going to play fast and loose with it and you're going to tell me you're playing fast and loose.
Right, right.
Then I don't really care.
So given that the canon is very sort of loose, would you rather have just rebooted it and just have had Lynch be the new James Bond as an African-American female? Would you prefer that to actually having a film with Craig and her are in the same cast, and I guess he passes it off to her or something like that?
I don't know. I mean, it all depends on how they do it, because they could have just said, hey, we're going to make a new Bond series, and this is going to be the person. But I think they really want to take their time. They want to do a Star Trek. And Star Trek is the movie, the Abrams 2009 Star Trek is the movie I always point to.
Uh-huh.
When people say, how do you do a soft reboot right? And I think that's how you do it, because the 2009 Star Trek did a really cool thing where it kind of connected the old Star Trek to the new one by, like, using Spock, like, yeah, Leonard Nimoy Spock. And they connected it, but then made it so that there was a very clear divide. They sort of, like, had their cake and ate it, too.
Right.
Where it's like, hey, don't worry. Like, these new characters are not going to interfere with what you know. But we're going to give you just enough of a rope to where, like, hey, we're not leaving you out in the dust.
Right.
Still, like, giving you what you want, but this is just, like, a new take on it.
Right. Also, recently, the first James Bond, Sean Connery, passed away. And I'm wondering if maybe that is what brought this back into the news cycle.
Oh, that could definitely be. They might definitely want to be capitalizing on that.
Right.
And Sean Connery, who famously said several times that it was okay to hit women.
Right. Well, you think maybe that's what killed Sean Connery? They told him that the new 007 will be a black woman. And he was like, what? And then just passed away.
Trebek.
We called the dog Indiana. I do not do a good. That's not what your mother said, Trebek.
I'll take anal bum covers for 700, Alex.
Penis mightier.
The penis mightier was a great one.
Oh, yeah. If you've never seen SNL Celebrity Jeopardy, so good. So good.
Truly Sean Connery's best work.
Yeah, is his best work. Better than when he played Ramirez, a Latinx character in Highlander.
Yeah, he's a Scottish man playing a Spaniard, who also had, like, I think, like, Asian ties or, like, South Asian ties in that movie. Something crazy.
I gotta revisit that movie. I almost said series, but no, I gotta revisit that movie. It's been a while.
Yeah, you don't need to see the whole Highlander series.
No, no one needs that. So let's talk a little bit about some trailers. The first trailer I want to talk about is the new Dune. This, you can tell that they really want this to be the next thing. They want this to be the next Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, all that wrapped up. And there's a lot of Herbert books, right? There's a lot of Dune books that you can, you know, milk.
Oh, yeah. There's, like, five different books that he wrote. And they did that thing that I don't like, where his son and someone else, like, took up the books.
I always hate that, because it's like, well, what credentials do you have other than owning the rights? Owning the rights is all you have.
What, you blood with someone? So, like...
Right.
It's like when I see Christopher Tolkien books. It's like, what are you...
Right, exactly. Yeah, L. Frank Baum's, like, grandson writes Wizard of Oz books. And it's like, who asked for this?
Yeah. But yeah, there's like five... There's enough that he wrote, because there's like five different Dune books. The David Lynch movie, and then there was a really good miniseries that Sci-Fi Channel did in the early 2000s.
I've always avoided reading it, even though I know it's a sci-fi classic, because it's so long. And it's the kind of thing that people say, like Lord of the Rings, a lot of people always like, it's very dense, so you got to be ready, like, if you're going to do Dune this year. And maybe avoid's not the right word. I've always been like, okay, this is not the time.
Yeah, it's definitely very dense. It has to do with, like, warring families and factions and a lot of, it's just like a lot of things to remember. It's kind of like the one complaint like major complaint that you hear people say about the Game of Thrones books. Mm-hmm. That like it keeps going in and out to different families, and there's like too many. It's like kind of a big juggling act.
Yeah,
and that was the problem with the David Lynch Dune movie, is because they wanted to cram it all into one film, and what ended up happening is they had to like add a sequence to the beginning of the movie to like explain a bunch of exposition,
right?
And then they would hand out cards, like postcards to people walking in the theaters to explain like the different houses and the family, right, different characters, so you keep track of it during the movie. Once you start having to do that, that's no good.
Like when you need to give out footnotes for your film.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the new film is directed by Denis Villeneuve, who directed Blade Runner 2049, Arrival, Sicario. It looks beautiful. I mean, I've never seen the Lynch film either. So I have no touch tone for Dune, other than knowing it's his big title. So just watching the trailer, it looked interesting to me.
Well, he's the guy to do it. Like, he's reached, like, Villeneuve has reached that status where he's the next big guy you go to when you want to do a huge big budget movie.
Yeah.
But you also want to have like the right amount of creative freedom. Like his movies have earned enough where he's afforded that type of freedom, and he's the right guy for Dune. And it's sort of like the perfect story, because you don't have too many directors nowadays who like get that type of big budget freedom.
Right.
And like he got it for this. Like really, it's like Christopher Nolan was probably the last director to get it.
Right.
And now Villeneuve has got it. And I'm sure there's like a couple other legacy directors that have it, but like he's the last, like his work on Blade Runner and Arrival, mm-hmm, really like cemented him, because Blade Runner 2027, the new Blade Runner was really good, and people kind of like poo-pooed the idea before they even like saw the trailer. It was like one of those movies.
Yeah.
And then when they actually saw it, it was like, oh no, this is actually really great. Like, he somehow did the impossible. And I am not a fan of the original Blade Runner.
Yeah, neither am I.
I don't know who these people are that were, like, shocked by the twist ending. But, like, mm-hmm, I don't know. Maybe I saw it coming a mile away. I don't know who.
Right.
Maybe it's just one of those things where, like, when people talk about Darth Vader being Luke's father in Star Wars, that, like, oh, it was so shocking then, and it's just, like, so part of our culture now.
Right.
That, like, there's no way it would shock anyone now, unless, right, like, you're a really young child who saw Star Wars.
Right,
but,
right,
like, the Blade Runner twist at the end where it's like, oh, is he a replicant or not? Like, it feels like that's hanging over the entire movie. I don't get how people are shocked by that.
Right, and it's I read the book, which I really like the book, and I never liked the movie because I thought it was sort of boring and just sort of style over substance, which is kind of what I feel about Ridley Scott as a director. And then when I read the book, I really liked it because it's Philip K. Dick and it's very heady and it's very existential. But it made me like the film even less, because I feel like the actual material is much better. And the book, the idea of him not knowing if he is a replicant or not is baked into the whole book. So it's sort of there.
Yeah, like the movie treats it more like a mystery or like a big gotcha moment.
Yeah.
It's like everything's building towards it. Also, I just don't think, I think it does feel, I just can't get over the fact, it feels very like cold, like almost unimaginative. And I guess it's one of those things where like there was nothing like it at the time, and that, right, blew everyone away in like the early 80s. But yeah, now it's like we've seen so much stuff after Blade Runner.
Right. Right, right, right. It's that sort of futurism, orientalism, you know, that you saw in like Akira and stuff. I guess if you were an anime fan, you were more used to that. But if you weren't an anime fan, that was probably something very new for you. But all right, let's get back to Dune. It looks really good. It's got, you know, obviously like it's called Dune. So there's this sort of aesthetic of deserts and sand, and everything seems sort of bleached and overly bright. It really comes the sort of like heat of it really comes through. It's really good. The costumes are really gorgeous. It's got an all-star cast. It's got that son of a bitch, Timothy Chalamet, who every time I see him, I think about the John Mulaney bit, where he's like, my wife loves that son of a bitch, Timothy Chalamet. Oscar Isaac, who will be in every franchise. Don't you fucking worry about it.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing I fear about the Dune movie, is that I feel like for people who don't know, who aren't like predisposed to Dune at all,
yeah,
they're going to go in thinking it's going to be the next Star Wars. And that is not what Dune is at all.
Right.
Like, Dune is, no pun intended, it's like a much drier FI experience.
Right.
Like, you really need to know what you're getting into.
Right, exactly. So, I don't know. What do you think of the trailer? What do you think the trailer's setting people up for? I mean, they've got cool Pink Floyd music in it.
Yeah. All of the trailers for all of Villanueva's movies up to this point have done a great job at telling you absolutely nothing about the movie.
Yeah.
The Blade Runner trailer told you nothing about that movie. Arrival purposely told you nothing because that was more of a mystery. So that one kind of gets a pass. Sure. Then this Dune one kind of just sets up like, oh, hey, it's a sand planet and there's a mysterious guy, you know, kid.
It's just a visual impression. Going to lead
some kind of army. Yeah, it's just like a visual impression of what the movie is going to be, but doesn't set you up for anything. You don't know any of the characters. They're not, like, you see stars, like, you know, like, Batista's in it and Oscar Isaac's in it, and hey, that's great.
Brolin.
Yeah.
But tons of people.
Yeah, Josh Brolin. But it's like, you watch the trailer, at the end of it, you're still like, okay, but what is this movie?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm the perfect example because I just know what Dune is, but I've never seen it or read it. And I'm expecting beautiful visuals, cool costumes, I guess, and some action. Is there fighting? It looks like you see Timothy, that son of a bitch, Timothy Chalamet, like training with Josh Brolin.
Right, but you kind of just answered your own question, where you're like, is there fighting? And I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that because I don't know if they're – clearly they're going to want to do a sequel. And right. Maybe this is even part one of two, because I've heard that maybe this is like they're splitting the first book into two movies. Right. So you might not get a big payoff in this movie. So it might end up being like a really sort of bare bones, light on action affair. So it's like I don't quite know what they're setting up for.
I think it's always a mistake when you start a series off and you hold back. And you're like, don't worry, guys, in the sequel, we're really going to deliver. Because the sequel never comes when you do that.
Well, that reminds me of the very ill-advised Terminator Salvation, which was supposed to be the first in a new trilogy.
Right.
And they were like, oh, well, you know, we were going to show you the Terminator War, but we're holding back because we want to save that for the next movie. And it's like, well, why didn't you give that to us in this movie? And then we would love it so much, you'd get to do like five more movies.
Right. Like, I remember with Superman Returns, people being like, well, it's kind of a slow story. It feels a little bit too much in the mold of the 70s Superman. And then Bryan Singer, who, you know, at that time, it wasn't common knowledge that he was a giant piece of shit. Bryan Singer was like, oh, don't worry. In the second one, Superman's going to go crazy. It's going to be Brainiac. It's going to be fucking great. And that never happened.
Yeah, and like, in both cases, Superman and the Terminator Salvation movie, now they're just these weird outliers.
Yeah.
Like, they're movies that, like, mean nothing.
You could tell that they're, right, but you could tell both are trying to start something. It's like a false reboot. It's like you kind of turn the key, and the ignition kind of started to rumble, but then didn't turn.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's like an example that's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember it, where like it was another one where they did like two movies and they were really losing something in the third one and then they just never pulled the trigger on that third movie.
Oh, Divergent series?
Oh, that might be. That's definitely an example.
That's an unfinished trilogy, which is still amazing to me that happened.
Yeah, or like they'll plant little ideas, and or like sometimes they'll do a smaller movie to gauge interest in a bigger movie. Because it's like you're already spending millions of dollars on a small movie. Just spend like a little more money and do the big movie.
Well, there's the new Mummy movie with Tom Cruise. That was meant to kick off a cinematic universe. And that one has...
Yeah, that's a great example.
Jekyll and Hyde is in that for no reason. And, you know, it sets up all these seedlings that went nowhere.
Yeah, that, like when they did Dracula Untold, and that was supposed to be the start of that franchise.
Right, right. And then they walked that back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a new Jungle Cruise movie coming out with The Rock. And they're saying it's supposed to be the start of a Disney Parks cinematic universe. A cinematic universe based on Disney attractions. And it's supposed to start with this Rock Jungle Cruise and then lead into the Karen Gillan reboot of Pirates of the Caribbean and then the new Haunted Mansion. And but you know, all you have to do is make one misstep and then it doesn't happen. And then you just got a weird film that has Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in it.
Yeah. God, now I'm just thinking about that Universal Monsters cinematic universe.
And they were the first.
Like, they did a whole, like, they were the first to really flop it because.
But if they were the they first did to whole, have like, a cinematic universe.
Oh, yeah, like the original.
Right.
From the 40s.
Right. They were the first. And now they can't get it going again.
No, and this new one, they did all this press where they did, like, photo shoots of, like, the entire cast of this new universe.
Right.
And then they just ended up doing The Mummy.
Right. And it was a big, huge failure.
It sucks. It's a very boring movie. It's my least favorite type of movie because it's not bad enough to be entertaining.
See, I actually like the Brendan Fraser ones. They're kind of like fun Indiana Jonesy adventure.
Oh yeah, no. The Brendan Fraser Mummy movies are great. Yeah. I feel like in the past year or so people have really been giving those movies like a good reevaluation.
Yeah. All right, so that's the Dune trailer. We barely talked about it, but, you know, check it out. I'll see it if it ever comes out, you know. Right now, we're playing this weird game of...
Yeah, who knows when it'll...
Right, they just keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and it's like, you know what? Just fucking... I was talking to our friend Chris Sorrentino recently about the new Ghostbusters and how it got pushed again. And so now it's over a year... going to be released a year after it was supposed to be. And it's like, you know what, dude? You're not going to make money in China anyway because they don't disrespect ghosts like that. Just fucking put it on demand. Ghostbusters fans will pay the $20.
Oh, God, that Ghostbusters fans would pay way more than 20 bucks.
Right. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, look, I love the movie theaters, and we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, and theaters are struggling, and I don't want to turn my back on them. But I don't like this idea of, like, shoveling things down the road. Especially because that's a cast with kids in it. So it's going to be that weird thing where on the press tour, the kids are going to look like teenagers when they were little kids in the movie. And that's always weird to me.
Yeah.
Like, whenever you see that, it's like, oh, this movie was shelved for a while.
Yeah, like New Mutants.
I know. Boy, that movie fucking finally got a release with, like, a fucking meh.
I know. It truly was the Fantastic Four of this year.
You know, remember when there was like a hot second where people were like, hey, maybe this is going to be really awesome. Maybe this is a hidden gem.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk because they went back and like reshot a bunch of stuff, but then like reshot the reshoots.
Right, and then Kevin Feige was like, this is good. We should just put it out.
They put it out and it was like, eh.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the trailer to the new Animaniacs reboot.
It looks good.
It does.
I mean, the best compliment I can give is that it looks like Animaniacs.
Yes. And I have to say, I like that it's 13 episodes because it means they can treat it preciously. You know, one of the things I don't like about children's animated series is sometimes it's just so much of it. And I like that, like, you know, you got 13 episodes, you know that they're going to treat each one with care.
Yeah, 13 is like a good number for this kind of thing. Like, because you're right, a lot of series, like legacy series, go like 26 episodes, 29 episodes a season, or they could do the opposite, and they could be like, okay, we're coming back for a limited run of like 6 episodes.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, but that's not enough. Like 13 to 15 is like, that's the sweet spot.
Right. And from the trailer, it seems like the plot is that they're kind of fish out of water because they haven't been around since the 90s. and they're kind of reacting. You see them coming out of graves.
Yeah.
Which is a funny image. Yeah, and then you've got, it's you see like the things you want to see, but then like with modern references, there's like a short little clip of like a Trump in there. Pinky and the brain is looking at YouTube videos. Dot says something.
Oh, there's a whole world of possibilities that they can play with.
Oh yeah. Dot says something about mansplaining. It looks good from Steven Spielberg.
You're the best thing Steven Spielberg's been a part of in like 15 years.
I know. So when is the Tiny Toons coming back?
That's coming back. I think that's coming to HBO Max.
Oh, really? I was just saying that rhetorically, but I'm not shocked.
Look it up. It is actually coming back.
Makes sense.
They just announced it like a week or two ago.
Yeah. Were you a fan of the original Animaniacs?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, I love the Animaniacs. I love Pinky and the Brain too. I thought they were equally good.
Yes, yes.
Animaniacs did a very good job of embracing the history of Warner Brothers animation while being uniquely suited to the times of like the mid to late 90s.
Well, it's interesting because what they do is kind of something you see a lot now. Which is the idea of like, you know, all of this sort of postmodern appropriation of older texts. Cause it's like, they are supposed to be like early animated, you know, they're supposed to be early cartoon characters from the 30s, in the 90s, but they were created. They didn't really exist in the 30s, but they're drawn in that 30s style.
Right.
And like the 30s characters, they're just sort of, like if you look at the original Mickey or the original Felix the Cat, they're just kind of dark. Like, you don't, like, what are they? What are Yakko, Wakko, and Dot? Are they cats? They're just nothing.
Right. And they've got the whole like Bugs Bunny, like wisecracking thing going on.
Right. That's true for all of them. Like, if you look at early Mickey, it's like, that doesn't look like a fucking mouse. All right. So the last trailer we looked at is for the Lego Star Wars Christmas special. And oh boy, did I need that this week. It looks like a delight.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting choice, but I'm not really surprised. I could totally see this this like regime of people who are running Star Wars currently.
Yeah.
Say, hey, let's do a new version of the Star Wars Christmas special. And oh, hey, let's make it Lego.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that adds like a nice little wrinkle to it.
And, you know, let's reference the original Christmas special, which is infamous now of being so bad. You know, it's about Life Day, which is what the original special was about. But it's sort of an interesting plot. Rey finds like a key to the past. And like, I guess she shows up in various classic moments from the original films. It seems like they found a fun way to get everything in there. There's even a scene in the trailer where you see Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, and Rey is fighting with Darth Vader with her lightsaber, her yellow lightsaber. So I guess this takes place canonically after The Rise of Skywalker. And they see Baby Yoda and they stop and they're like, oh, so cute. So, you know, it's like they got everything in there.
Yeah, they're just kind of having fun of it. And it's interesting to see the Lego brand sort of branch out a little bit, because there's always been Lego Star Wars toys.
Yes.
But like, I feel like this is them taking like the Lego Movie brand.
Yes.
Branching out a little bit and giving some of that like humor.
Right.
Into the Star Wars world.
Right. What I like about it is it also doesn't spoon feed anything to you. It's sort of both canon and not canon. It's not canon because obviously it's this outlandish comedy, but it's canon in that it exists in a canon logic. Like, Rey is going to have her yellow lightsaber because that's the lightsaber she got at the end of Rise of Skywalker. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just sort of like nebulous Star Wars, you know, who knows where in the timeline it is. It seems to clearly, like, you know, you see Poe in it, you see Finn in it, you see Kerry Russell's character from the end, from Rise of Skywalker, you know.
Yeah, it kind of assumes that you are at least somewhat familiar with the original Christmas special.
Right, right. Which I think is a smart move. It's a smart move. What's something interesting about it is it sounds like some of the cast are cast from the movies. Like, I'm pretty sure Oscar Isaac is Oscar Isaac. I'm pretty sure Lando is Billy Dee Williams. But I don't know if Rey is Rey. And it sounds like Seth MacFarlane is the Emperor, because he's done the Emperor a lot for Robot Chicken, which is interesting.
Well, that's interesting because a couple of years ago, we're going to do a show called like Star Wars Detours.
Yes. It was one of the last things Lucas himself was working on. It was this weird animated series that was going to be like a funny series. And he was doing it with Seth MacFarlane. No, sorry, with Seth Green.
Yeah, and like that just got completely canned. Like there's a couple things in Star Wars' history that like they should really like cobble together and just release already. Because, like, I could swear, and maybe I'm completely wrong about this, but didn't they film and maybe even, like, edit, like, a full season of a live-action Star Wars the early to mid-2000s?
No, they I don't know if they filmed any of it. They wrote all the scripts. So somewhere there's a season worth of scripts for a Star Wars live-action series. Right around the time Lucas ended up selling to Disney, there were really three projects he was working on. One was that live action show. The other was the Detours animated cartoon comedy series mm-hmm. that we just referenced. And the other was the one I really wanted, was the 1313 video game, which was supposed to be like in the gritty underworld of Coruscant.
Yeah, that one was really exciting. There's still rumors to this day that like they're going to revive that game, but I think that's, I think it's dead at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they've done things like that. You know, I think in The Mandalorian, in a little bit of some of the other video games, they've showed you like the grimy side of Star Wars. Even in like Rogue One, they've showed you some of like the
Even in Solo.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. God damn it. I love Solo. It's such a fun movie, and I hate that it's so like slept on.
Yeah. I've said more than once on this podcast, it's my favorite of the new movies. It's just a fun, it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's what I've always wanted from these new Star Wars movies, which is just, here's a fun adventure.
Yes.
In the Star Wars universe. You're going to see some new places, some new faces. Set pieces,
right?
You're gonna see the parts of the Star Wars universe that you wanted to see explored in the original trilogy, but that the prequel trilogy never paid off on,
right?
And that's like the smugglery, you know, more, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, like human, you know, bounty hunter parts of the Star Wars universe, not so much the Jedi parts. And it's like, this is it. Takes a lot of inspiration from a piece of Star Wars spinoff media that I always loved, which is Shadow of the Empire.
Yes. You know, it's funny. I was just thinking about Shadow of the Empire because this whole new thing that they're doing, which is the High Republic, it's these comic books and novels and all sorts of media that's going to take place 200 years before Episode One. It reminds me of what they were doing with Shadows of the Empire, where it's like, this is a multimedia, multi-platform, you know, transmedia Star Wars experience. You know, they really did that with Shadow of the Empire. I mean, there's the N64 game. There were the comics. There were the action figures.
The book.
And I loved all that shit.
Oh, yeah. And if they had never made the prequels, I feel like they would have just kept going on with, like, hey, here's little pieces of that original universe that we're going to kind of blow up into these big events.
I wonder if... the answer's got to be out there somewhere that I don't know it, but I wonder if it's canon still.
I would. That's a good one. I don't know.
Because I tell you what, though, Dash Rendar's ship, I think, has appeared in some of these new movies and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So
I think in Solo, it might have appeared.
Dash Rendar, a poor man's Han Solo.
Yeah, Dash Rendar and the everyone with Kyle Kinarn.
And then Prince Caesar. Or Zizu, or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, Prince Zixor, or whatever the hell his name was.
Green guy. Bad guy, green guy.
Yeah, remember when you had to fight IG-88, and that's just when the game was over?
I know. What a fucking... God damn, that's a hard...
That's a hard fucking level. Yeah, there's a part, for people who have no idea what we're talking about, in the Shadows of the Empire video game, which is a great game once you have the cheat codes to select whatever levels you want. If you play it without cheat codes, eventually, like halfway through the game, there's a level where you're running like on this long like train, this like moving train.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't fucking end. And then once you finally do get to the end of it, there's a boss battle with IG-88. And the second he kills you, you have to go back and play the entire train level again.
Yeah. And he's IG-88 super hard. And you're in your terrain is you're like in a junkyard. So like you can't really see IG-88 because he keeps blending into the background.
Like, giant hills. And yeah, because he's a robot and you're like mixed in with like giant piles of robot parts.
Yeah.
And he's got a jetpack and you don't. Like, it's bullshit. Call bullshit on that part of the game.
Oh, damn. All right, Vin, let's take a break. We'll come back with a chill sesh.
Yeah.
New from PCMC Studios, Cuckoo Bananas, a comedy podcast about living with depression, anxiety, PTSD, and all the other things that make life difficult.
Welcome to Cuckoo Bananas.
Cuckoo Bananas.
Bananas.
Today, Bush Chunks. I'm just angry today. I'm just mad at the world today. Everything makes me angry.
But let's talk about childhood.
I think a lot of that insecurity is because of the narrative we're fed that you have to be beautiful if you're a woman, you have to.
And I was like, well, I don't have coverage. And they're like, well, you could pay for the medicine. It's $10 million a pill.
Everybody has got their shit. There's no person that life hasn't gotten to.
Clonopin and weed, like cheese and a fine wine.
In our interactions, we are not perfect. And the sooner we can acknowledge that, the sooner we can become better people to be in relationships with.
So you want to come back in 2 weeks? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. In my head, I'm like, I'm never coming back to this place ever again.
Hey, you're really worthy and really wonderful. So take care of yourself.
Do you have any diagnoses? Has anyone ever thrown some letters at you?
A little particularly Cuckoo Bananas today.
Me and Kate are not licensed professionals. We are not therapists, psychiatrists, or psychologists.
Cuckoo Bananas, funny chats about serious stuff. Coming soon everywhere podcasts are available.
If I want this podcast to be about anything, I want it to be about honesty. This is Cuckoo Bananas. All right, welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Mangiorno. I'm joined with Vin Forte. Vin, how was your break?
Oh, it was good. Nothing happened.
So, yeah, this is the chill sesh, and let's talk about something that has not been very chill, which is the 2020 presidential election and how we have experienced it through media. So my preferred 24-hour news network is MSNBC. Now, MSNBC is the liberal version of Fox. They are as far to the left as Fox is to the right, but unlike Fox, they don't spout incorrect falsehoods. That's, to me, a big difference. So I've been watching, the first night, actual election day, I watched MSNBC. And, you know, things were happening, things were coming in, and then it sort of hit a big slowdown.
Yeah. Part of the fun of watching MSNBC during an election is two words. Steve Kornacki.
And the Kornacki cam.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Kornacki. He always looks frazzled. He doesn't have a jacket on. He's going all over the big board, but he always knows what he's talking about. He's not like,
yeah.
He never misses a step.
He's good with math. Kornacki's the guy on MSNBC who deals with the big board. And, you know, it's this big sort of like touch screen where he's touching things and comparing things to last election and zooming in and zooming out. He's got the energy of like Jeff Goldblum at the end of Independence Day when he figures out they're going to upload a virus to the aliens and kill them. That's his vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely has a very frantic vibe where he's just kind of like jumping all over. Oh, you want to like, Steve, why don't you jump into, you tell us what's happening in Georgia. Oh, you want Georgia? You fucking want Georgia? And then he'll just like press into Georgia and then give you like county by county all the stats.
Right.
And be like, well, you know, Biden gets 1,000 votes here. Then his path to the White House has to go through Nebraska. So we got to touch on Nebraska now. Then we got to do this and that. And he's like, it's calculus on the board. Like, it's insane. Right.
But, you know, he's not confusing. I think he really explains things in a very sort of simple mathematical way. Of likelihoods and the likelihood of, you know, Trump winning, the likelihood of Biden winning. You gotta love.
Yeah, he's a very. I'll tell you, I interviewed Steve Kornacki on my old podcast. He's a very, for as frantic as he gets, he's a very calming presence during an election because of the fact that he feels the least biased. Like he feels like a guy like from a different time, where he's just there to give you the facts. Like
numbers don't lie.
If this happens, yeah, exactly. Like, hey, like he just comes out and he's like, hey, here's the data. Here's how Trump could win. Here's how Biden could win.
Right.
You know, if this happens next, you know, Trump's going to win. If this happens next, Biden's going to win. He's not trying to, like, obfuscate or make it seem like one person's going to win over the other. And right. It's like, it's good to see, like, data people.
Right. Because the rest of MSNBC, they clearly are coming at this with the vibe of, we want Trump to lose. And how are we doing? How's our team doing? Which, by the way, I don't mind. I'm totally for subjective journalism.
Partisan journalism.
I think objectivity is not really possible anyway, so just come out and tell me where you're coming from. But like you were saying, he's just the math guy. He's just telling you how it fucking is, how it's going.
Yeah, like I love Rachel Maddow's head exploding just every time like she asks him to do something, and she just is like trying to keep up.
Right. Now, one of the things that I find just really fascinating from a broadcast media perspective is on election night, over the years, they have cultivated a sort of style, a sort of horse race style of, you know, we are going to watch all the data come in. We're going to get those updates. We're going to look at the Electoral College. We're going to show you who needs what to wear, and it's going to be this big race. And so they did that on election night, but because of COVID, we had a lot of mail-in ballots and early voting, okay? And by the way, this is one of the biggest elections in American history. Tons and tons and tons of people voted, and I don't think it's just because people love or hate Trump. I think it's because when you make it on one fucking day, that's not even a holiday off work, you're not going to get a lot of people. And it's been amazing watching MSNBC for like 4 days now try to keep up the urgency. Like, that's what I think is killing them. That's what's driving, you know, Kornacki and all them crazy, is like, you know, they have to have this horse race mentality. But like...
Well, because that first night, it was like, okay, you know, what state's coming in? Oh, this one's, you know, just turned blue for Biden. This one's, you know, red for Trump. Like, there was a lot they could sink their teeth into. Now it's like, oh, we just got an update. Steve, what's the update? Okay, we got 600 votes just came in from Macomb County. It's like, okay, right. Well, that's
right.
Not as exciting.
Right. You know, there's like two or three updates from Georgia every day. And it's like, okay, at 9 o'clock, we're getting some more votes from Georgia. And it is... To try to keep, it's like they're spinning plates, to try to keep up that energy. You could see them wearing themselves thin, because another thing, and look, it could go anyway. Maybe, you know, by the time you hear this, somehow Trump won. But basically, the math has shown from, you know, day one that it's kind of a foregone conclusion that Biden is going to win. There's just way more of a chance of Biden winning than Trump. Trump has just... logically less avenues to victory, but that's not exciting. So it's like they've been folding themselves in half, you know, say both explaining that it's basically going to be Biden, so you have to wait and be calm, but also we need the ratings, so oh my god, it's election night all day.
Oh yeah, they're making, because before it was almost certain that it's going to be Biden, they had that like two-horse race mentality of like, could be either or right now. But once it became kind of clear that Biden's going to win, now all of a sudden in the past 24 hours, I've noticed that they've jumped on this like weird train of making a big deal out of Trump possibly getting Arizona, which is a state that will be meaningless if Biden gets Pennsylvania or Georgia.
Right. As we are now recording this on a Friday night, Pennsylvania is the thing, the big thing where there are 20 electoral votes. Trump was leading for a while, but all of the outstanding mail-in ballots hadn't come in yet. And all of those were going to go to Biden because Democrats believe in COVID. So they wanted the mail-in shit. So they knew that it was eventually going to flip. And it happened earlier today. It flipped. And now Biden is sort of running away with it. So it's kind of like, you know, they're talking about Georgia. They're talking about North Carolina. They're talking about Nevada and Arizona because these are all battlegrounds that are still being counted. But really, once Pennsylvania happens, it's over.
Yeah, like that. Like that's 20 delegates. Boom. That's it. And right. Pennsylvania definitely looks like it's going to Biden at this point right now, because like you said, the Democrats look. Trump spent months, years, even it could be argued, telling his followers, "Don't do mail-in voting. Mail-in voting is a fraud. I don't like it. Just show up." You can't trust mail-in voting.
Right.
So all of them went, okay, so we're not going to do mail-in votes. Whereas Democrats were like, hey, there's a pandemic. This is kind of cool that we're actually in voting. Right. So we're going to do it. And now Trump is like, oh, where'd all these new votes come from? I was leading and now I'm not. And it's like, well, you're the one who told everyone not to do mail-in voting.
Right.
So that's why none of your people are coming through.
And I think it was very smart for the Democrats. They really got the message out in the last couple of weeks of, they really put out Trump's playbook. Like Bernie Sanders was on Jimmy Kimmel, and he said exactly what's going to happen. He said, you know, they were talking about the red mirage. It's going to look like they're winning, and then the mail-in stuff's going to come in, and they're going to count that, and that's going to take more time, and then the Democrats are going to go up. And Trump is going to come on TV, and he's going to say that I'm being cheated. Because he's so predictable. He's such a narcissist baby who can never just admit that he lost. You knew that he was going to do this. So it sort of takes the steam out of it by kind of waiting for it, predicting that this is what he was exactly going to do.
Yeah, it's schoolboy tactics on schoolboy tactics, where it's like, you know, if you're an adult, you know what the childhood bully is going to do already.
Right.
It's like, oh, they're going to throw a fit, and then they're going to cry, and then they're going to try and get their way. But, like, if you know that's what he's going to do, then it's sort of like, it's almost like knowing about Freddy Krueger. You know, where, like, if you're not afraid of Freddy Krueger, he can't hurt you.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like, it's kind of like that. Like the Democrats are finally learning to, like, actually take the steam out of Trump's sails.
One, two, Trump is coming for you. Three,
I'm gonna come for you.
Four, better lock your door. Yeah, he is a big goon. But let me ask you, how have you been consuming all of this? Have you been addicted to it as I have, or are you, you know, saying fuck it, I'm gonna look at different things and not care?
Well, there's a mix. I've been watching a lot of the NBC coverage, quite frankly, because they've been streaming it on YouTube. So it just makes it all the more easier to keep up on.
Yeah.
And then I've also just been checking Twitter, because Twitter is the place where you can get the information in real time. And quite frankly, you can get the memes in real time. So you could see like what's actually hot in the streets. What are the kids talking about?
Right.
Like you can get a nice little respite too. Like the other day, when Trump was tweeting, stop the count.
Yes.
People jumped on that, were putting up memes regarding like the count from Sesame Street.
Yes, yes.
And it was,
became a meme.
Yeah, and it was like pictures of cops tackling the count, like yeah, stopping him from like literally stealing the election.
Yes.
Like Count Chocula started trending out of nowhere.
Right. Yeah.
People were like, we got to stop this guy. He's ruining the cereal. Like
My consumption has been similar. I don't really do Twitter very much, although we do have a Twitter for this show, at PCMC Pod. But I love TikTok, which we also have a TikTok for the show, also at PCMC Pod. And I've been basically just watching MSNBC on my phone, even like while I'm driving. I'm not looking at it, I'm listening to it. So I've basically been watching MSNBC since Tuesday. And then I'll like take a break and go on TikTok. and I'll look at, you know, memes, and, you know, I love TikTok. I mean, it's a zeitgeist. It's not the zeitgeist of the whole country, but it's the zeitgeist of the country that I agree with or I like to live in. So, you know, I've been getting the memes and the jokes, but still keeping my mind on the election. I've had a really hard time doing other things. Like, I've got editing to do for my podcasts. I've got reading that I like to do, you know, video games. I've done very little. Since Tuesday, I've basically just been glued to MSNBC, and I know nothing's happening. Yet, I don't want to not be watching and then have somebody go, oh, you hear it just happened, Pennsylvania. Like, I want to be watching when it comes in.
Right.
I've gone on this journey with Kornacki, and I feel like I want to be there when he hears the news.
Oh, absolutely. Now here's the thing, because we're still technically in the chill session, right? We're talking about things that we've been enjoying.
I haven't been chilling days, Vin.
Okay, well, queen. I have something.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the word. It's funny you mentioned the word cringe, because I'm about to send you a link that I want you to look at. I've been saving this.
Oh, okay.
I had this because I don't think you are the type to have seen this. And I want to show it to you in real time, and I want to get your reaction.
All right.
What I'm about to send you, I'll send it to you over Facebook, is for Kim Kardashian's birthday last week, Kanye West got her a hologram of her dead father giving her a birthday message. And he looks ripped right out of a PlayStation 2. And I'm just going to have you watch the message.
How much did Kanye spend on this? I'm watching it. It's a little bit of the floating head thing. The head and body movements aren't working together. Honestly, for cheaper, he could have just hired David Schwimmer.
Right.
David Schwimmer did a great job playing Kardashian in The People vs. O.J. Simpson. Okay, singing. What's the best part of it?
I would say from the beginning, and you can stop after like a minute.
Okay.
You're 40 and all grown up. You look beautiful, just like when you were a little girl.
Okay.
I watch over you and your sisters and brother and the kids every day.
Oh my God.
Sometimes I drop hints that I'm around. Like when you hear someone make a big peefee. Or when you make a big peefee.
A what now? Peefee?
I would drive you to school in my tiny Mercedes every day and we would listen to this song together.
Okay. I mean, it's odd, but it's kind of sweet.
Well, wait.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a long and a hard road, but it's worth it. I'm with you every step of the way. The way that you're connecting with your roots and supporting Armenia means so much to me. You are a proud Armenian. I am a proud Armenian father. The most beautiful thing that I have witnessed is watching you grow your family. You marry the most genius man in the whole world.
Wow.
Kanye West.
Yeah, you could stop it around there. He made a hologram big him up.
Right.
And also mentioned big peefee.
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
I know what it means, because Twitter was in a frenzy last week saying what the fuck is big peefee?
Yeah, what is
and it? And apparently peefee. Okay, kids, cover your ears. A peefee is a pussy fart.
But didn't he say he did a peefee?
He said his tell for, hey, I'm watching over you, is when you hear someone make a big peefee, or when you make a big peefee.
A queef, if you will. Okay, so this is weird. You can tell that Kanye wrote it. But I don't know. It shows that he actually cares about her. Whatever I think about their marriage, I just sort of assume they sit in chairs in different rooms and don't look at each other. And then like maybe have sex once a day. And then he goes out and I don't know what he does. I'm not big fans of either of them.
No.
But
no, he's I'm sure he's no fan of you. I'm sure he doesn't listen to PCMC. He's too busy hanging out with Elon Musk and Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Oh boy, what a motley crew that would be. well, that is kind of disturbing. But how much do these holograms go for? I want to make one.
It's the thing, I don't know. Like, could you, like, could one of us get a hologram of someone?
It's like a cameo.
Hey, Grandma, when you die, you're becoming a hologram.
Yeah. Who'd he get to voice him, though? That's the weird thing.
I think from what I heard, they take, like if you're famous enough where you've got a lot of dough lying around of yourself.
Yeah.
They, like, use that. So, like, the Roger Ebert thing.
Wow, but that, did they really do that? Because it sounded pretty smooth. I thought they just had some sound to, like, record. That's bananas.
I don't know. I read that they actually did use his voice.
Well, that's insane. Well, with that chilling video, let us take another break, and we'll come back with obsessions. I thought Halloween was over, but apparently not. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Mondrone. I'm joined with Vin Forte. How are you?
Oh, I got an election update from Philly right now.
Election update, everybody. This is...
Let's see what's going on in Philly.
Okay. A couple of Trumpers dancing to killing in the name of...
Okay. Yeah, they're really raging against that machine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Mixed... messages there. Thank you for that update, Vin. That's been in the news desk.
Hopefully that means they want to take down Wall Street.
Right.
Now, too.
Right. I don't think Rage Against the Machine, they weren't conservative, were they?
I'm going to have to do my research, but I'm going to say no.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is Obsessions. Vin, would you like to go first? Would you like me to go first? Gentleman's choice.
I'll go first. Okay, I've had two obsessions this week.
Whoa, this has only happened a few times before. Ladies and gentlemen,
I know.
This is unprecedented. I've been watching too much MSNBC, and I want to make everything sound like it's more important than it.
Yeah, everything is going to be – everything is breaking news. We're cutting into everything.
I hate to cut you off right now, but we got breaking news. Breaking news coming out of Staten Island. Vin has two obsessions this week. I interrupted you.
Oh, man.
To tell something about you. All right, we're going we're going to the news desk to see Vin. Vin, what do you got?
Well, I've been balls deep in my little friend Mario.
I'm going to isolate that and send it to the FBI. Balls deep in my little friend Mario.
Yeah, but I have. I bought the Super Mario 3D All-Stars collection for Switch.
Okay.
Which, if you want to get it, you better get it now because it's only going to be available until March for some reason. But it has Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, and the most important, Mario Galaxy.
Well,
and I've just been playing the heck out of Mario Galaxy.
We talked about this the last time you were on the show, and I'm glad you were able to go and buy it. So which of those three titles have you been spending your time playing?
Really, Mario Galaxy, which... is probably the best Mario game they've ever made so far.
And you're counting Mario 3 and Mario World, all of that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, they're all classics. But I think Mario Galaxy, at least of the 3D Marios, is the best one. It's the best 3D Mario, I'll go as far as to say.
Yes.
It's just so tight and so refined. It does everything that Mario 64 did, but just, like, cuts a lot of fat.
It's a true sequel to Mario 64.
It's a true sequel to Mario 64, and it cuts a lot of the fat. Like, instead of having big, more open worlds that have, like, 8 stars to collect,
right?
You have these, like, small planets or galaxies that might have 1 star to collect, or, like, might have a string of, like, 3 stars to collect. You really cut out a lot of the fat.
I only played it once. I played it when it came out, and I loved it. I think it's maybe one of the best titles for the Wii. Its controls were very smooth. Now, we had a pointer control. The Switch does not have that. So how do they manage to...
No, but Switch... Well, Switch has gyro controls in the controller. So what you do is basically you set your pointer with the R button, and basically wherever you're holding your controller, like if I'm just sitting down and in a resting position, my controller is like leaning up and to the left, and then I tap the R button, the pointer will recenter on the screen near the top left of the screen. Now, and then when I move it around, it moves around for position.
Does it feel good? Does it feel the same way
it does feel the same way. It feels great. Like, the controls do not miss a beat in Mario Galaxy.
Okay. Interesting. It's interesting that you don't see that anymore, the pointer. The Wii controllers were a very interesting system. Because you could argue that Switch is more traditional.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
the Wii, like, Mario Galaxy took used the controllers very well.
Yeah.
And they felt very natural. But it was just, like, not enough games used it in that way.
Right. And what about Mario Galaxy 2? I don't think I ever played that, and I feel like no one talks about that.
Mario Galaxy 2 is pretty much, like, more of the same, and then, like, some stuff that you were hoping Mario Galaxy had. Like, plenty of people that like Mario Galaxy 2 better than 1. Really? And it's not in this collection, which is very weird.
Right. When is it ever going to come out again?
Well, the rumor is that, because this collection's only available until March, and once March hits... Yeah, exactly. They're doing the Disney Vault thing.
Like, what is...
And, the rumor is that, like, once it's back in the Disney Vault, they're going to release the game separately on the eShop. And that's when Mario Galaxy 2 is going to come out.
Okay. So, this is the anniversary. This whole year is the anniversary of Mario. So, I guess it's for that. There's been an interesting Mario push lately. I mean, you see Mario Legos, Mario action figures and dolls, and I think they brought back the, it was a handheld.
Oh, the Game & Watch?
Game & Watch. They brought back Game & Watch.
They have a new, like, Mario 35. Like, Battle Royale game that for free on the Switch?
Yes, I played that. It's kind of like the Tetris game. Like, you're playing the original Mario, and 34 other people online are playing it, and it's sort of like when you kill a villain, or when you kill a bad guy, they get sent to one of the other people who's playing. So it's like, basically, the way you would win is whoever doesn't die, whoever lives the longest.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I liked it. I think my problem with it was I had a hard time with the controls. I feel like that original Nintendo controller was so perfect in the way that it, you know, and how responsive it was, and just the way it felt in your hand. And I feel like as much as I like the Switch for Switch games, I wasn't able to enjoy it with the Switch controllers, the original Mario.
Yeah, maybe you have to get you should try getting, if you don't have one already, the Pro controller.
Yeah, I guess I should.
Yeah. I know they're also releasing a bunch of other Mario stuff this year. Like, they're basically like a lot of, like, the big Mario game that was on the Wii U, they're re-releasing for the Switch, like, later this year as well. So, like, they've got a bunch of Mario stuff.
Worlds, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah. All right, I'll play that. I've never played Sunshine either, so maybe I'll pick this up.
Yeah.
So what's your other obsession?
I've been watching, every once in a while, watch, like, a run of old, like, talk show clips. Yeah. And lately, I've been working my way through a playlist of Harlan Williams on Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Oh, now that is fun.
That's a tasty treat, fairy friend.
Wait, for the kids who listen, and you know the kids listen, can you explain Harlan Williams?
Oh God, can I explain Harlan Williams? That's quite a question. Harlan Williams is basically, you've seen him in stuff.
He's in Half-Baked.
He's in Half-Baked. He's in Dumb and Dumber. He plays the cop that drinks the piss.
Right.
Disney gave him a chance. He's in a movie called Rocket Man that Disney did that
starring vehicle
was not good. Yeah, it was starring vehicle. But mostly he's as like a Norm Macdonald type where he really shines when he's on like talk shows that'll let him just go nuts.
Right.
And he basically he takes the idea of like a non sequitur and just like works it into a conversation.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like the stupidest thing you've ever heard, and it's like also like kind of brilliant.
Right. And he has
like they'll be talking about something completely irrelevant, and he'll just be like, "Hey, Conan, you ever wake your grandma up at 3 a.m. and smack her in the face with a big canoe?" And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Or like I was watching a clip before where he's like talking to Conan about like, yeah, you know, they got these female cops now, and so one of these female cops pulls me over and she's like, you know, you could pay the on the you could mail in this fine, or you could pay the on the spot fine. And Conan's like, what, on the spot fine? And he's like, yeah, she said you could pay the on the spot fine with your hairy checkbook. And Conan's like, what are you talking about? Or he'll like look at the set and be like, I see you got the all these stars up in the sky here, Conan. It looks like Morgan Freeman's face and the freckles he's got on there.
Yeah. I remember one was like, I'm going to go to Blockbuster and rent the Aladdin video and hit you over the head with it.
Yeah. Or like he'll say something that will completely ruin the goodwill of the audience. Like the audience will be on, like I was watching one where the audience was on board.
Yeah.
With everything he was saying. And then Conan said something like, oh, so it's a, you know, you get what you want. It's like a win-win situation. And then he goes, I know a Chinese guy named Win-Win.
Oh, like, that's hilarious. yeah, that's a good obsession. Yeah, he has not done much lately.
No, I know he had a podcast for a while, but I never really listened to it. I know it used to be called the Harlan Highway. That's all I know about it.
All right. For me, I mean, I'm truly obsessed right now with what's going on with the election. I would say that, you know, I'm pretty obsessed with the Kornacki cam, which is just MSNBC. While other things are happening, they'll just have a camera on him, and it's just him with like a calculator. And like, if you watch him, you'll see him get information and like get excited. It's like watching somebody like it's just basically just watching a nerd do their work. But it just the raw excitement gets me going.
Well, I had no idea there was an actual Kornacki. Is this on YouTube? Is this a live stream, the Kornacki cam?
I don't know.
Or is this something they just cut to?
It's something that they cut to, but it's also something that they'll just have in the corner of the screen. Just while other things.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if there's a pure feed that we could just tap into. I mean, I hope there is. There should be. that's basically my current obsession. Hopefully we'll have an end to this and, you know, everyone will be happy. That's going to happen. Well, this has been a very not chill PCMC coming to you Friday night of election week. You know, I actually thought...
special election edition.
Yeah, I actually foolishly thought earlier on, oh, we can talk about the new president-elect on the podcast. Nope.
Nope.
Vin, thank you for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Vin Forte, everybody. This is PCMC. This podcast is available anywhere podcasts can be found. And hey, if you like hearing my voice, check out Cuckoo Bananas, also available anywhere podcasts can be found. Vin, we end every episode by saying, go bye-bye.